Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Gals of Geekdom podcast. I am one of your amazing hosts, Crystal Williams. My pronouns are she, her, by the way. And I am joined by my equally talented, funny, and awesome co-host, Lizzie and Jazzy.
Hi.
Hi, I have purple hair and pronouns she, they.
I have red hair and adjectives. My pronouns today are he, him. My adjectives are anxious and busy.
My adjectives are fatigued and tired.
Yeah, that's just kind of like state of being.
Mm-hmm.
Or a state of grace. I tried to tie in the Taylor Swift stuff. I don't know if that works. And we have wait, there's someone else on this call. That's weird. I think we have another guest today.
Wait, where? Where?
Wait.
Oh, you mean me? Oh, right. Yeah, hi. My adjective is part of my name. I'm Insane Ian. My pronouns are he, him, and hi, I have hair. A lot of it. Sorry.
But is it pink, blue, or purple?
At the current state, it is a bit of off blonde.
Oh, that's boring. You should make it
right?
Purple.
Yeah, well, you know, being an actor, I can't always diet the fun colors I want.
That's lame.
Agreed.
And,
one day, I would just want to, I really do want to diet plaid just to see if I can keep it without combing it.
And then people are just going to post the gif from Spaceballs of gone to plaid.
Exactly.
For that exact reason, right? Or you could join a ska band and do like the whole black and white squares. The checkerboard squares.
That's what my shoes are. I have the checkerboard Vans.
Oh, perfect. You're like one third of the way from being in a ska band.
I just need the chain wallet and I'm there.
Awesome.
And the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones just broke up. Damn it.
They did?
Yeah.
I did not see that. That is...
Just kind announced it yesterday, I believe.
Damn, I'm not up on my ska music.
On your ska culture?
The only ska stuff I'm listening to is a very outwardly trans We Are the Union.
Hells yeah. They're awesome.
They are awesome. Damn it, Reed, I want you to come on the show. I'm trying. I want her to be on the show because her that album has been like the soundtrack to my last year. Basically artist recommendation time. But welcome to our show, Ian. We're glad to have you. You do all the comedy and the fun music stuff, right?
Yeah, I do. I do comedy music. I do both parody and original songs. I'm what you might call a nerdcore rapper. I do, but I do all sorts of different genres. I don't just do hip hop. I have a ska song on the new album. I have of 90s post punk pop stuff. I've done country in the past, but I do all genres just so long as they're all funny. That's kind of my thing. I do comedy music. Been doing that for probably about 20 years now.
I love ska punk. It's having a revival, and I'm so happy about that.
And it's queer. Just saying. Now it is, at least. I don't know about back then. Not sure.
I feel like ska punk was always the lame version of punk, but I don't care.
I tweeted not long too long ago whether or not I would get more flack for liking ska or being trans.
Liking maybe. Ska.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
People think I'm really limited in the music I listen to, but look at how eclectic I am.
Yeah, I like that. And I will continue this music discussion in a second, but before we get more into the fun, I just wanted to have just a moment of seriousness. I know, weird on the show, right? If you know the Blockbuster Buster, Erod is his name, or Eric. I don't know if anybody follows their Twitter account, but this past week, Marsha, his wife, passed away from COVID. So I just wanted to, so I knew her a little bit, and she was an incredibly sweet and kind person who received a lot of unnecessary hate online a few years ago. And that's kind of how we met and became friends. So I hadn't talked to her in a while, but I did text her and have a good relationship with her. So I just wanted to say that I loved her, and I'm sorry for him, and, you know, just pay a little bit of respect for her and for him during this obviously heartbreaking time. So
my heart goes out to him and you, because that's just the roughest of rough right now.
Yeah,
I wish him the best journey of healing that he can have.
Me too. Well, thank Likewise. You.
And that's really all you can say in a situation like this.
Yeah. So I'm just going to also clarify that COVID-19 is no fucking joke. Take it seriously. If you haven't been vaccinated, do it. Wash your hands. Take precautions. Stay distance from people. If you can, wear N95 masks.
If you are able to get vaccinated, get vaccinated. Some people.
Yes, that's fair. That's also fair to bring up. Yes. So, much love to her and to him. So, from the gals. I guess time for us to transition out of that.
I was gonna say
I didn't want to leave the show on the sad note. I wanted to get it out of the way with, so that we can go into the fun and heal together a little bit.
And now segue.
I was gonna say, if we're mentioning people who don't want to fuck, if we're gonna mention COVID restrictions and COVID and mandates and people who don't want to fucking follow them, Marvel's been having terrible luck with having.
Evangeline Lilly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tweeted between Evangeline Lilly and Letitia Wright, I'm just expecting Marvel to announce Joe Rogan will be playing Ben Grimm.
Oh no.
I will say, I don't know if the situation with Evangeline Lilly is quite as egregious as Letitia Wright.
Well, she did attend a anti-vax rally, so.
Well, it wasn't an anti. Well, here's the thing about her. I feel like she's just standing on the wrong principle, which is that people shouldn't be forced to get vaccinated, but they should be vaccinated, which is not like the thing she's arguing about is incorrect, but.
She's still a fucking idiot.
Yes. Oh, yes, she is. I'm not arguing that. It's just less batshit insane than Letitia Wright's complete and total anti-vax.
So
tirades she's been going on. Sure.
I just find it funny that I already thought that scene with all the fucking in Endgame with all the female MCU heroes grouping together to do a cool fight. I already thought that scene was fucking lame because it was Marvel acting like they earned something they clearly fucking didn't. But now that scene just gets worse with time, I swear to God, and it's because of shit like this. And I can't even blame Marvel for that one.
No, you gotta blame the individuals who are being incredibly...
I thought it was a bad scene, don't get me wrong, but...
Are we just we're at this time where a bunch of celebrities are just saying the stupidest shit?
Yeah.
Or is that always?
Yeah, it's always that timeline. It's just amplified now by social media.
Shout out to Gwyneth Paltrow having an NFT, apparently.
Yeah, because it wasn't enough that she has a candle that scented after her fucking vagina. We need an NFT, too.
That's the least surprising thing I've ever seen, to be honest, because Gwyneth Paltrow is already crazy.
Oh, yeah. I was not surprised to hear Gwyneth Paltrow was into NFTs. That was the one celebrity I was not shocked about.
Oh, yeah. It's just okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Anytime a celebrity says that they're into NFTs, I'm just fairly certain somebody came to them with the idea of, hey, this is a thing that can make money. You can promote this. And nobody's telling them the full idea. That horrible... awkward almost infomercial that fucking Paris Hilton did on Jimmy Fallon recently.
Ugh. Where she very clearly doesn't know what it is she's selling.
Not in the slightest. And I'm pretty sure that's exactly what's happening with Gwyneth at the same time. And
of course
we had
it
Troy
is.
Baker doing that. And
oh god,
don't remind me about the fact that Matthew Lillard is involved in some NFT project. That broke my heart. I was like, no.
Oh, I didn't even hear that. Oh damn,
Matthew. You are
don't have heroes, kids.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't have heroes and don't. Here's the funny thing. I want to say I'm a staunch believer in never meet your heroes, but in the voice acting industry, I have met some of my heroes and they're fucking wonderful. So it's like,
oh, lucky for you, Jesse.
Yeah, unfortunately, Tara Strong is not one of them right now.
Oh, no. Tara Strong, Greg Sipes, and Troy Baker are all just, like, no.
we have a safe one with Weird Al saying he won't do it.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. If Al were to say he's doing an NFT, my heart would shatter.
It would shatter into a million pieces. I'm there.
But, and speaking of voice acting, at least Rob Paulsen started to when people went, hey, maybe look into this. And he went, you know what? No, I'm backing out of that now.
Right. I saw that, which is good, because if fucking Rob Paulsen got into him, I'd just be like, no, please,
yeah, his...
no.
Yes.
Oh, God. But, no, it's funny because most voice actors in the community are generally heavily against NFTs, and I think it's because, like, we work directly with people who are negatively affected. Like, a lot of people are so negative. Like, a lot of people who's are individually negatively affected are artists, and as mm-hmm. voice actors we work with artists because we voice in their stuff. So
who is it that's releasing the Nirvana NFT?
There's fucking Nirvana. Oh my god,
that's why the whole Kurt Cobain possibly being trans discourse was happening, right? Is because that's why, because Nirvana was in the news over that,
right?
Yes and no. It's from a tweet from what's her name.
I mean, I know that this is a conversation that pre-existed. I just figured that was why it came back up.
Yeah, maybe that's why.
Because Nirvana was trending over that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the Nirvana discourse, or the Kurt Cobain discourse, which is a fascinating discourse to go into. But I think I've said some things on Twitter about it.
Oh no, you said a thing on Twitter? That's never a good sign. I'm just joking.
I mean, my immediate take on it is just like, I find that there's a lot of compelling conversation to be had about the possibility that Kurt Cobain might not have been entirely cisgender. But I also think that if someone in their lifetime never claimed a certain identity or pronouns and such, that we shouldn't be like aggressively assigning it to them postmortem.
I'm very much in agreement with that.
Same. As a trans person, I'm generally not okay with people trying to aggressively assign a trans identity to someone who is not alive to confirm it.
Yeah. Exactly. And like I said, there's a lot of, like, I listen to people speculate about this, and it's very interesting and it's very compelling. And I think a lot of what Kurt said and wrote about while they were alive speaks to it, but I think I think to just assign that to him after he's been dead for over 20 years, I just think is.
Mm-hmm. I think my take is very similar to all of yours, but a little bit slightly different. I feel like the idea of aggressively signing to someone who's not here, I think mainly should only necessarily apply to people who maybe passed away within this last maybe 100 years. I think it takes on a very different turn when you're looking at genuine historical figures who may have not had the terminology of certain times or just the culture in general. Because I think what's more fascinating about that discussion is less so about Kurt Cobain. As much as I actually think it's totally cool if you feel in your heart that he was definitely trans, I think that's totally valid. I think my issue initially was aggressively using the she/her pronouns on it.
Yeah, and I understand that Mags was mostly doing that because she was trying to piss off the transphobes that were being shitty in her comments. But when
that's
people
a,
were
that gently, is a motivation I can respect, but
yeah, so like I got that, but I feel like a lot of people tried to gently explain to her that this maybe wasn't okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she just doubled down so much, and it was like, you need to take a step back from this conversation at this point.
I think that goes back to the whole Lindsay Ellis situation, though. Like, right, there is like some good and some bad in social media when you're being bombarded with hatred. Even the gentlest of pushes feels like a push, you know?
Absolutely.
So I don't...
Everything feels like piling on at that point.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you could necessarily not want to double down on that sort of situation. So, but I think
the thing that got me particularly upset was when she said, she kind of was like, well, Kurt's not here to get upset about it. I'm like, that is not the clever comeback that you think it is. That's kind of a terrible mm-hmm. thing to say.
Yeah.
Because you know what, Kurt Cobain's child and widow are here to be upset by the things people say about him. So
yeah, it's I think it's a very complicated topic. And what was funny was I tweeted saying something along the lines of the Kurt Cobain discourse does bring up a fascinating idea that lesbian community makes jokes about this all the time, but the whole, you know, they were just friends sort of historical.
They were roommates.
Yeah.
Gal pals,
the best of friends. And I feel
their best friend who neither of them married. They shared a bed, even though they lived in this 3-bedroom apartment. They bequeathed all of their earthly possessions to the other upon the time of their death. Truly best friend goals.
And I think what I was getting, I said the Kurt Cobain discourse brought up an interesting topic because of the idea that history and like a lot of historical figures have essentially been cis-washed, you know, like where it's like, well, looking at history through a potentially trans lens would be way more interesting, kind of like how we now are starting to recognize the idea of, you know, queer washing in general. It is, you know, like straight washing for historical queer figures.
Right.
So I think there's a really good conversation to be had within like trans spaces about the very concept that maybe taking another look at these historical figures that have been described in certain ways and going, well, you know what? This is very much like something a trans person would do, you know, like I think there's validity to that. What I was frustrated with was when I tweeted that I said the Kurt Cobain discourse, people stopped reading my tweet as soon as it said Kurt Cobain at the beginning and decided to go like to make the arguments that we were discussing about him being cisgendered or whatever. And I was getting frustrated because it's just like, don't you read the fucking tweet? It's not what it's about. Like,
right.
Reading the tweet? Are you expecting him to read? Holy shit, you're putting such high expectations on him.
I would think allies would be, and other trans people would be smart enough to read the fucking tweet, but I guess the internet is going to be internet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just love the ways in which social media strips all meaning.
Right.
You know what? We are talking about, in relation to a musical figure, Lizzie, there was another musical person you wanted to jump into.
Time to flex the Swiftie muscles a little bit. Taylor Swift is in the news again.
Flexing the Swiftie is a euphemism for something that I'm not aware of.
I was gonna say, flexing
okay.
The Swiftie, huh?
Time to flex the Swiftie, not in public, dear God!
Allow me to set the stage here.
All right, God.
I'm sorry, remind me of his name. It's Damon Albarn, right?
Yeah, the guy from Blur and Gorillaz.
I'm going to preface this with the fact that I am also a fan of the Gorillaz. I love Gorillaz.
As am I.
They're very, very cool band. Anyway, so Damon Albarn was in an interview where they were talking about songwriting, and the interviewer, because I was on the record, this motherfucker tried to say that he was, like, taken out of context. No, he fucking wasn't. And the interviewer said, what about Taylor Swift? She's a pretty great songwriter. To which he said, she doesn't write her own songs. And the interviewer said, of course she does. She always co-writes. To which he then responded with, well, that's co-writing. And that's not the same as regular songwriting. Which, A, is not true. And just as a preface. And then he goes and he says, but I love Billie Eilish and her brother. Because that's apparently not co-writing because they're siblings. I don't know.
Jesus.
Yeah. And then, you know, Taylor Swift rightfully gets on Twitter and is like, fuck you, basically. She's like, I the fact that I have to defend my ability, my songwriting is ridiculous. Like, she was like, I am a songwriter. I write all of my own music. The fact that I have to defend this against you, that you're trying to defame me, whether you like my music or not, is irrelevant. I write it myself. Which is completely correct. And then also her most frequently collaborated with songwriter and producers, like, got on Twitter and were basically like, this dude is an asshole. Like, I have, like, all these people coming on being like, I have watched Taylor Swift in her writing process. To say that she doesn't write her own music because she frequently uses co-writers is a massive mischaracterization of her work. And it's especially from my perspective, as a person who has been a fan of Taylor Swift since she, like, first got famous, because I was a middle school-aged girl when Fearless came out. So I was the direct target audience for Taylor Swift. I've been here the whole time, right? Like, the whole thing it's just a comedically incorrect thing to say. Because, first of all, Taylor Swift has, at minimum, 3 songs that she solo wrote on pretty much all of her albums. Mm-hmm. Speak Now, in specifically, an album that came out over 10 years ago, every single song on that album she wrote by herself with no co-writers. So, like, what Taylor Swift, when Taylor Swift was getting famous and she was kind of competing with, like, the Disney girlies, right? Like, Miley and Selena and Demi and these people who were also coming up on the Disney Channel at the same time. The big thing that they were, like, selling about Taylor Swift, like, her whole selling point is that Taylor Swift wrote her own music.
Right.
That was, like, the whole thing about her. If there is a single thing that people generally know about Taylor Swift, it's that she is a songwriter before she's even a singer. And she has said that so many times. She was employed as a songwriter before she got a record deal. Like, Taylor Swift is a songwriter. You don't have to like the music she writes, but she writes her own goddamn music.
Yeah.
So it's just a comedically incorrect thing for someone who has been in the music industry as long as Damon Albarn to say.
Tell me how you really feel.
And again, you don't have to like Taylor Swift. You don't. It is fine if you don't. It's just such a ridiculous miscarriage. Also, he called her music endlessly upbeat, which, if you've listened to any of it, literally any album,
Have you listened? Specifically to the last 2 albums.
Especially the last 2 albums. But, like, any album in full you listen to, that's just blatantly not true. Like,
wow.
It's honestly just a shameful mischaracterization and lack of knowledge about one of the most important and influential people in your industry.
Again, you sound like Taylor's lawyer.
I'm sorry.
I mean that in the best way.
You don't have to like her.
That is a blatant mischaracterization of my client.
It just is. How are you going to be in the music industry and just know so little about Taylor Swift, who is arguably amongst, like, the top 5 most famous, well-known, and profitable musicians in the world?
You're about... Are you about, like, 5 minutes away from putting a blanket over your head and making a video screaming, leave Taylor alone?
Yes. Yes, I am.
We all owe Chris an apology. Because
I know. Yes.
That they were absolutely right. We should have left Britney alone.
Does she have a new name? I think she came out as trans.
She did, but I think she kept the same name. Let me see.
I wasn't aware of that, so I apologize.
No,
I missed him.
No, it's fine. That's why I asked.
It's I should have known this before even bringing it up, but her name's Kara.
Her new name is Kara?
Mm-hmm.
Kara Crocker?
Cunningham.
Cunningham. Oh, right. No, it's Chris Cunningham. See, I'm smart. I know things. Anyways, Kara, that's her new name. But yes, you're right. We all owe her, collectively owe her a huge apology as a society.
Absolutely. I do see this this swift I can't even think of the word diatribe, maybe this swift diatribe of yours going that way, but I don't think the blanket is necessary.
I agree. This is just me being
You just have very strong feelings about it, and that's amazing and great. So,
no, this is what this podcast is about.
It's also yes. not necessary strong feelings. Because enough people have publicly come to her defense that, like, I don't.
Oh yeah, of course.
She doesn't need me to do anything. This
podcast is known for strong emotions and feelings. It's kind of like been our thing.
Oh, absolutely.
I was in here when there was almost like a fucking virtual fist fight over Star Wars. Jesus.
We're not doing that again.
There's been far too many virtual fist fights over Star Wars in the past 5 years. So
I accept responsibility for what happened.
It's okay. It happens.
That's fair.
It's
That's fine. Fair.
and then you almost murdered me over Space Jam.
There's a what sentence one doesn't it? Hear often enough.
The sequel wasn't good, Crystal. Accept it.
I didn't say that the movie was good. I said that it was far better than I was expecting it to be, and that I kind of enjoyed it because it was, at least it wasn't like as terrible as I was expecting. So
I said the same thing about the Snyder Cut. It wasn't as bad as I was expecting.
Yeah, that's
it was
that,
better
that
was than me. The Justice League, but yeah, it's still not good.
I'm in the same boat about the Snyder Cut. It's like, yeah, wasn't as bad as it could have been. Wasn't very good, but
no, it's very self-indulgent and overly self-masturbatory. But it's a movie. It exists.
There are a lot of people who overhyped the Snyder Cut as being
yes,
like, great.
Many people who hadn't seen it yet.
You mean
his cult? Like this is. Even outside of his cult, you get people who just hate Disney a lot.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, there's plenty of reason to hate Disney.
Sure.
Yeah. And so they hate Disney and the Marvel and the MCU thing, a lot of people I see a lot of people overhype, who aren't even part of this article, overhype the Snyder Cut as this auteurist masterpiece, and I'm like,
when it's as chill. It's as much of a factory product as any superhero movie, let's be real.
Like, really?
No. The Snyder Cut was the second coming of Jesus.
Snyder Cut was the indie film of the year.
Indie film of the year.
No, people act like, oh, Warner Brothers didn't want this cut to be released. It's like, if they didn't, they wouldn't have done it. Or do you not know how movies work?
That's the thing. Is
if
Warner
they didn't
Brothers
want it released, they wouldn't have spent
thing.
$70 million extra dollars on it.
Right? It's like
what existed? What existed before Snyder went back in and finished the movie, because Warner Brothers realized that they had gave him the money to do that. What existed was like a 4-hour work print.
Exactly, the Snyder Cut was a work print that was unfinished. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was an unfinished movie. You don't release that.
Right, and even then, I consider the Snyder Cut as it was released to be a perfectly fine assembly cut. Needs some trimming.
Dire need of an editor, yes.
Yeah, it could be fantastic, but as is, it was fine. It's probably the one thing Snyder made for the DCEU that I was like, you know what? I kinda liked it.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of self-indulgence in that really could have been trimmed back. Like, did we really need the Nordic women for 3 whole full minutes singing? Did we need the choral screaming every time Wonder Woman came on screen? Every time!
Do we need the part? Because it was so funny. It was so funny. Like, literally, Wonder Woman does anything in this movie, and the soundtrack goes,
Yeah. It's,
do we also need Barry Allen being a creep and touching Iris's hair?
God damn it, because other than that scene, I like, other than that shitty fucking scene, I like that character, but the problem is that shitty fucking scene still exists.
Hey, did you guys see that video of Ezra Miller threatening the KKK?
Yes.
Yeah. No. It makes
while
me happy
wearing
that
his Flash ring.
It makes me happy that this man plays Flash.
That
is the literal physical definition of woke up and chose violence.
I love
Doesn't
that.
Doesn't Ezra Miller use they them pronouns?
Does he?
They do.
They do.
Yeah.
Okay, I love them.
Well, they also pushed a fan to the ground. So did you see that video that went viral a little while ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. They definitely put hands on someone.
Anyway. I will say, I'm a bit of a Zack Snyder apologist.
I'm sorry, just the phrase made me laugh.
Ironically, though, not for any of his work in the DCEU. Okay. I think those are all his worst and least interesting movies.
Man of Steel. Look, I'm a huge comic book nerd. I own every movie that's been made from a comic book, even like not just Marvel, DC. I own everything. That's why I'm like, I don't care where it's from. If it's a comic that's been turned into a movie, I love it. I'll own anything. I'll own anything. I do not own Man of Steel because fuck that movie.
Do you own The Crow?
Yes, of course.
The Crow is my favorite comic book movie.
I don't just own The Crow. I all own all four Crow movies and the TV series. The fourth Crow movie, Wicked Prayer, which has Eddie Furlong as The Crow. I have the Mark Dacascos TV series of The Crow on DVD. Yes, if it's a comic book turned into a TV or movie, I own it.
I mean, when it comes to Snyder, I haven't seen much of his work outside the DCEU, unfortunately. I did see Watchmen, though, and I did like Watchmen, so...
Watchmen is decent, and until you watch the Maggie Mae Fish video on it, and you go, oh no, Snyder is awful all the way around.
Here's the thing, Watchmen is not the greatest adaptation that could exist.
Absolutely
of
not.
That comic, but Watchmen, again, is an infinitely more interesting movie than anything he did for the DCEU, and I stand by that.
It's funny because
I'll agree with that.
It's funny because it's like, I remember back when I saw Batman v Superman in theaters and I did not like it at all, and then like some months later I hear everyone getting on my ass like, oh dude, they released this extended cut and it makes the movie magically good, and I'm like, okay, I'll give it a look, and I did, and I was like, it made it a movie. I will give it that much.
It definitely made it better. But again, you're polishing a turd here.
Right. There are more problems with that movie than the stuff that was cut. Don't get me wrong. The fact that there was stuff cut from the theatrical cut didn't help it, and it made it ultimately worse. I will agree to that. But it's still not a good movie. You still have other problems aside from the the biggest thing. My biggest takeaway from the extended cut of Batman v Superman was always, well, at the very least, I now know Superman's motivation in the movie.
Yeah.
And that was something that was lacking in the theatrical cut. So I'll give him that. And now Lex's plan makes slightly more sense. But I do only mean slightly.
We also really needed to know that it was Jimmy Olsen who died at the beginning.
Yes. Yes.
First of all,
clearly.
I hate that. I hate that with everything in the every fiber of my being. You introduce Jimmy Olsen just to murder him immediately.
Well, it's clearly that, you know, he did that because he doesn't, Snyder doesn't like Jimmy Olsen as a character. He's trying to make his dark, edgy, realistic, heavy air quotes, version of Superman. So, he's got to have all the grit and the darkness and the realism, again, heavy air quotes, for his version. So that means that Jimmy's not a photographer. He's this thing that's also going to die in a couple seconds because, hey, I had to put Jimmy Olsen in, but I...
Was he not Lois Lane's photographer?
He was a special agent, though. He was like an FBI agent.
Why can't he just be Lois Lane's photographer?
Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen. That's what he is in the comics. Actually...
Did you hear the argument that people were making, that trying to say that, oh, it wasn't actually Jimmy Olsen. They were just using a fake name.
That's dumb.
That doesn't make that better.
No,
that's the thing with AU stuff. Like, if it's not in the movie, then it doesn't count.
Well, okay, it's the same energy. It's the same energy as, so you kill off Jimmy Olsen at the very beginning of the movie, and we're starting this version of Batman with Robin already dead.
Exactly.
I hate it.
And the fact that this version of Batman just mindlessly kills people. I have nothing against Affleck's performance, but I hate how this version of his version of Batman is written.
His performance is great.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So is, I also love Jeremy Irons' version of
Jeremy
Batman.
Jeremy Irons is that movie's biggest saving grace. I will say that.
Absolutely.
Like,
Jeremy Irons is probably one of the better Alfreds other than the one on Gotham.
Alfred and Wonder Woman were the two biggest shining points in that movie for me.
I agree. Wonder Woman was actually pretty cool in that.
I'm going to say this real quick. This was the big thing that you were saying at the time, is that I was absolutely obsessed with the... This is something I actually do like in the DCEU. I'm not overall a huge fan of the regular costume designs, but Wonder Woman's costume redesign for the DCEU, I have been obsessed with since I first saw it.
They've been getting better with costumes as the film's gone on. I thought the Aquaman costume was great. Shazam's costume looks fucking
incredible. Shazam's costumes were amazing.
Yeah.
As long as they don't mute the fucking colors, they're wonderful looking.
Yeah, the costumes don't look bad. It's just the color grading doesn't know surfaces. Because I've seen pictures of the DCEU Superman outfit in good lighting. Hell, it was even used with good lighting. It was even used with good lighting in Shazam.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Okay, I will say something I'm bummed about. I think I saw this in a press leak for Shazam 2. They took Mary Marvel in pants.
Huh. Okay.
And I don't like that. I liked that Mary had her skirt. I thought that spoke a lot to her character.
Mm-hmm.
That bummed me out a little bit.
But at the very least, the costume design in the DCEU has always been good. It's just, like, most of the time, the lighting never did any favors. Like, even the Wonder Woman costume, it was a good costume in Batman v Superman, but it looks better.
It was so muted. It looks much better in Wonder Woman.
Yeah, it looked better in the Wonder Woman movie, and as much as I don't care for it, it even looked better in Wonder Woman 84, because the color was allowed to shine, so...
Yeah, because it was 80s, so let's turn up the brightness and neon in that.
Look, I like the neon.
Oh, no, I'm a child of the 80s. I absolutely love the neon. I don't like that movie very much, but yeah.
Oh, I don't either. Oh, I don't either.
Again, a movie I own. But...
I'll say this. Wonder Woman 84 is worth watching just for Pedro Pascal's performance. I will say
absolutely.
That.
Does a great Maxwell Lord. I love it.
My bad superhero fan confession is that I actually still haven't seen Wonder Woman 1984.
That's okay.
Because everybody said, because everybody was saying such bad things about it, and I was like, no.
It's not horrible. I'd still watch it over
There's a lot of squiffy implications with it.
Yeah, I'd still watch it over a lot of the bad movies in DCU's Phase 1, but... Like,
yeah, exactly. It's better than Suicide Squad, but
okay,
it's still
not great. I am an apologist for the Suicide Squad.
Actually,
Not the Suicide Squad, the first
one. I know, you mean the first one, the David Ayer one? I misspoke there. But I'm a little bit of an apologist for that movie, not because it's good.
I'm the same way. I saw it in theaters, and I was like, this isn't terrible. This isn't as bad as everybody's saying. I know I'm in the minority in thinking that. But I somewhat enjoyed the original one. I loved the James Gunn one.
Gunn one is definitely better.
I can't go back to the David Ayer one after the James Gunn one, because the James Gunn one was just too fucking good.
That is absolutely fair.
Here's always been my big gripe with David Ayer's Suicide Squad. Is that it would work, and I'm sure this would still be a not great movie, but like they really gutted David Ayer's movie.
They did. Cries of release the Ayer cut, which for fuck's sake, they're not gonna do. That's the reason they recut the movie.
There's not enough money in that.
I've seen some of the stuff cut for this movie, and while there was some stuff that was cut that would have been interesting to see, there was plenty of stuff that, quite frankly, I'm glad was cut. I don't need a Harley and Deadshot romance. It's not needed.
Yeah, that would have been an unnecessary addition. I'm going to go ahead and say that the thing for me is that I was really upset that the studio made him cut around is that David Ayer had written and directed Harley and Joker's relationship to be the codependent, abusive shit that it is in the comics, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I've seen the set photo. There are set photos of him backhanding her and shit. Right. Like they didn't ease up on that. And you can have your own problems with Ayer being that graphic with it. That's a different conversation. But like David Ayer knew what he was writing, and then the studio got cold feet about that.
Right.
See, I think those
and made them cut around that.
See, I think those scenes would have been interesting to see, but they also come with the downside of more Jared Leto, which, no.
Yeah.
Please, God, no.
Is anybody other than, like, I know one person, but is anybody else excited about Morbius?
No.
No.
My girlfriend literally pointed at that poster the other day and was like, do you have exactly as much non-interest in that movie as me? And I was like, yes.
I have like, some curiosities considering.
Sure. Oh no. Curiosity is one thing, but
the connections to the MCU now.
And the Sony Spider-Verse, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the most fascinating aspect to me.
I'll probably look up the shit they did after the movie's release, because there's no way I say there's no way I'll pay to see this movie, but I keep forgetting. But I keep thinking, Jazzy, you have an unlimited pass to their theater. You're not paying to see any of these movies.
Yeah, you don't have to pay to see it.
I have to see it out of a weird sick psychological obligation that I have to see comic book movies. Also movies based on video games. That's a weird one, too. So, I will go see it in the theaters, assuming it comes out in the theaters and we aren't, like, you know, quarantined to high heaven again. But I still will see it, and there's one person I know who absolutely loves Morbius as a character who is fucking hype for this movie. But other than that, I don't know anybody else who's like, yeah, I'll go see Morbius. That sounds like a good time.
I don't know. When I saw the trailer for Morbius, I had the same reaction to it as I do most Disney remakes, where I just look bored at the screen and I'm like, okay, that's a movie we're wasting millions of dollars to make. Cool.
Yeah. It's a movie that's coming out.
It's a movie that exists. People will watch it or they won't. That's all you can really say about those things. Like, it's like the Bloodshot movie that came out with Vin Diesel. Based on the Valiant comics. Everybody forgot about that movie. It came out in 2020, and it was the greatest movie from 2006.
Wait, is that the one where he was like, they were like putting him in a simulation or something? I never saw this, but I remember seeing a million and ten trailers for this.
So all the trailers had the song Memories Are Made of This, and it would keep cycling on the song because he would keep reliving the same moment.
Yep. Because
they fucked with his memory. So he's actually like this, you know, bio-organically enhanced soldier, and they were placing those memories in his head so that they could restart him again so that he could go forward with whatever mission that they were giving him.
Yeah, and I thought it was ironic as a revenge mission.
I thought it was ironic, like, yeah, they kept changing what the revenge mission was. They tell you in the trailer, like, here's the guy that you have to kill. All right, let's put him in the same scenario, but change his face to a different guy that you have to kill, but it's all the same situation. And it's ironic that it's kind of almost a time thing, like a time loop thing, and they have Guy Pearce from fucking Memento in it as the guy who runs the organization, so they kind of did a little wink and nod to that kind of thing, but it's not really, like, supposed to be about time. It's just, it's based on a comic book. It's based on the Valiant comics. And it is very much exactly like all the superhero movies used to be at the turn of the century, like the early 2000s. And, like, having it come out in 2020 when, like, we've got the MCU and the DCEU and movies kind of moving along in their progression about how they depict superheroes, to have it kind of be this weird throwback was also in equal parts refreshing and fucking bizarre. I enjoy the movie, but it is not good by any stretch of the imagination.
Do you think it could have been one of those like movies that have been in like production like hell for a little while?
It absolutely was. There was
okay, that's what I figured.
Valiant Comics has had a lot of production hell shit going on with it as is, because, I mean, shit, back in the day when they were around in the 90s, Acclaim Entertainment, you know, the video game company, bought Valiant Comics and started releasing them as Acclaim Comics, just so that they could get IPs to make video games of. That's why we got games of Turok, Shadow Man, Armorines, and Exo Manowar and Iron Man in Heavy Metal.
They released,
sorry, my wheelhouse just got opened.
They apparently, speaking of which, they released a remaster. They apparently released a
the remastered port. Version of Shadow Man. Yeah,
yeah.
It was released on PC a year and a half ago, and it just hit console like a week ago. It's awesome.
Yeah, I know. I never played it. I was just aware that the PS1 version of the game was fucking awful. So.
Oh, the PS1 version is like playing mud. It was an N64 game that got ported to PS1. It is hugely I can't think of the word. It was ahead of its time because it was kind of like a giant open world kind of GTA-esque, but on N64 and PS1.
Goddamn.
So it was very. I can't think of the fucking word. My brain is just. I can't words today. I'm all out of the dumb. So.
I think we all are out of brain juice.
What is brain?
Brain juice, what's that?
I don't know, something.
What is this brain you speak of?
Something we don't have.
I can't words.
I do not understand the concept of brain.
That was a very eloquent reply to that.
Thank you. I mean, I try. I try during...
It's almost like voice acting is your job or something.
I don't know. I've voiced in a few things. You can say I'm a voice actor. I'm something of a voice actor myself.
Okay, I have to say, everybody here has seen No Way Home, yes?
Yes, we've seen it and had spoiler discussions on
it. I figured you might have, but I just wanted to make sure. That line... I'm something of a scientist myself. When he said it in the movie, I'm like, I turned into the Leonardo DiCaprio meme. I'm like, there it is!
Same.
Me too.
He said the thing with the words. We all know it. It's the meme. It happened again.
That meme is just a reaction I genuinely use all the time. Like, not sure. I can't remember if I told this story on podcast, but... there was a demo released for Camp Buddy Scoutmaster Season, that yaoi visual novel I'm in. And I didn't know there was a bit with my character in it. So I was watching a Let's Play of the new demo out of curiosity. And I suddenly hear my fucking voice coming out of the speaker. So I was like, wait, what the fuck? And then I had a very excited Leonardo DiCaprio meme moment. Where it's like, oh my god, that's me, and my character's dressed like a sexy elf. Yes! Yes! I love voicing it, yeah! SFW work. Because my characters are fucking hot!
I don't blame you for that.
It's so funny.
And so we've had two Spider-Man movies now that... Sorry, just thinking about that. We have two Spider-Man movies now that reference memes, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Hey, it's all of them are... Even one of them is still worlds better than X3. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
I mean, that movie...
Hello?
Crystal?
Am I gone?
You cut out for a minute. Okay.
Oh, am I back?
Yes, you're back now.
Oh, that was weird. Okay, we have these things that happen every once in a while.
All we heard was that moot, and then it was all of the silence.
Oh,
It became a Depeche Mode song.
I got sucked into a different portal in a different dimension for like 2 seconds.
Oh, the multiverse.
Back.
I understand.
Yeah, I shouldn't have. You know, my neighbor likes to tinker with all these like electronics, and you know, weird things happen all the time. So it's just my life.
Understandable. Anyway, you were about to say about X3.
I said that may be a bad movie, but I'm glad that line exists.
I I have to admit, X3 is kind of a guilty pleasure for me.
Oh, no, it's not a terrible movie. It's not a great movie. It's kind of just a movie.
It's a movie that has plenty of things I do not like, but it also had plenty of things I genuinely enjoyed. So
sure.
It's not the kind of superhero movie where I go up to bat for it and make it my entire personality, like Spider-Man 3 or Batman and Robin, but
I don't think it's as bad as people make it out to be. I also think I don't know. People like to pretend like the X-Men movies have aged just abhorrently, and I'm like, no.
They're clearly from the 90s,
but it's fine.
Like, I still enjoy them. Like, I a lot of people say the first one is aged horribly, and yeah, it's aged, but it's still fun.
Yeah, it's an early 2000s superhero movie. Yeah. It's exactly what it says on the tin. It came out in the year 2000. It looks like it came out in the year 2000.
Yeah, and X2 was fucking awesome. I will go up to bat for X2 any day of the week.
X2 is fantastic.
I am personally of the opinion as well that it's actually my favorite thing in the world that Magneto and Charles Xavier have seemingly aged 70 years in the space of about 10.
Yeah, I think that's pretty hilarious, and I'm all for it.
I thought that was funny, because every time a new X-Men movie in the prequel series came out, everyone was like, oh, why haven't they aged? And I'm like, shut up, I love these actors.
They didn't age because the first three movies aren't canon anymore.
Right.
That was like the thing. Yes, okay, we had Days of Future Past, where we suddenly had Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen in it again, but they eliminated that version of them by changing the future, so they don't age into them anymore. So I can
understand. Yes, but they do still age into them. But they still do they, though? Change the future, but it's still, yes.
Yeah, because at the end of Days of Future Past, when Wolverine woke up in the new timeline, it was still all the old film actors, so.
Oh, that's true, because Marsden came back, and because they totally retconned X3 that way.
Yeah, and everyone was happy until Logan came out. Then everyone was dead.
Yes.
But Logan was the best movie of that entire franchise.
Oh,
so,
Logan is a fantastic Western.
Logan is
like in my top five favorite movies of all time. I will never call Logan a bad movie. I adore it. So.
I like Logan Noir, the black and white version that's on the Blu-ray.
I liked that version up until like the last 20 minutes. Then I was kind of annoyed with the black and white because I didn't think it worked in like kind of the last bit of the movie. But everything up to it, yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was a great way to watch the movie. I will probably never watch it in that way again. I'll probably still stick to the colored version just because I prefer it. But it was still a cool novelty to watch. So
yeah, absolutely. It's like watching the black and chrome version of Mad Max Fury Road. It's kind of, it exists.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like Logan's my favorite X-Men movie easily. Like I said, it's in my top five favorite movies of all time. So you will never hear me say anything bad against it. I think in last time I reorganized my rank, I would say it's my third favorite film of all time. So
nice.
Wow.
And keep That's in mind, I put that over shit like Spirited Away, Old Boy, Pan's Labyrinth. That's just to give you a reference of how high a regard I put Logan. So
wait, in comparison, where is Evil Dead 2?
Evil Dead 2? Hold on, let me look.
Wait, Jazzy saw Evil Dead 2 recently for the
first
time.
And I loved it. It was one of my favorites. Okay, going to, because I keep all this shit organized on Letterboxd, because of course I use Letterboxd, do you know me?
Without actually giving more details, I will say that my last name is a pseudonym.
So Evil Dead 2 is currently sits at 15 in my top favorite movies of all time. So
that's still pretty high.
And the movies that beat it out are Perfect Blue, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Hell yeah, Perfect Blue.
Princess Mononoke, The Breakfast Club, both Kill Bill movies, Spirited Away, Old Boy, Whiplash, Pan's Labyrinth, Wolf Children, Logan, Good Will Hunting, and at the top A Silent Voice, because nothing's ever beating A Silent Voice.
This is a list worthy of rights, Jazzy.
Oh yeah, I've heard people compliment my film taste, and I'm like, okay, I just really like movies, but thank you.
I'm just happy to hear that, like, one of my all time favorite movies made your list.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy that that Perfect Blue is on there. I always loved Perfect Blue when I picked it up as a high schooler, and then they just recently had a chance to, like, they had one of those Fathom events thing about a year or two ago. And I got to see it in theaters with that, which was amazing. So.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, the Blu-ray of it is fantastic, too. They just put out. So.
Yeah. I got the new Steelbook Blu-ray that came out like a few months ago. It's
nice.
It's so pretty. And I already had I already had the standard Blu-ray, but this Steelbook was so pretty. It's like, I want this.
Yeah, we had this conversation on the last episode, Jazzy, but yeah, Perfect Blue I just saw for the first time not long ago. It's on that blue. I got it on the same Steelbook Blu-ray, but what a phenomenal film.
Yeah,
it's wonderful, and then when you watch Black Swan after it, you go, oh, okay.
That's where they copied it from.
Yes, exactly.
God, I was mentioning all my favorite movies. It's like, God, I want to watch some of these movies again. I want to watch Whiplash again now. God damn it. I fucking love Whiplash.
I just got one of my favorite movies in the mail today. I had a really good mail day and got the Blu-ray of The Frighteners in today with the director's cut on there, which I have not watched the director's cut of ever before. So I'm probably watching that tonight.
Is that newer?
No, the Blu-ray's been out for a little bit. The DVD of the director's cut is long out of print and is usually like $150 on DVD. But for whatever reason, the Blu-ray of it, it's a 15th anniversary edition. I got it for $10 off Amazon.
Goddamn.
That's pretty good.
I still need to watch my, like, because right after seeing Evil Dead 2, I ordered the 4K version of it. I still need to watch that. I still need to watch it on 4K. So I'll do that.
Let me know
weekend.
What you think of it in 4K.
I've heard people say that it's one of the ideal movies to watch in 4K. So, I'm excited.
Cool.
I am such a fucking whore for, like, different movie formats.
I watched those movies in reverse order. I started with Army of Darkness. I didn't even just start with Army of Darkness. I started with Captain Supermarket, which is the Japanese Laserdisc version of Army of Darkness. And then I started with Army of Darkness and then Evil Dead 2 and then Evil Dead 1.
That's actually a lie. I started with random episodes of Ash versus the Evil Dead.
My first
out
one
of
was...
order. and then I watched Army of Darkness, and then I went back and watched Evil Dead 1 and 2.
My first one was Army of Darkness. Then in a weekly movie night I had, during Halloween, we watched Evil Dead, and then my girlfriend showed me Evil Dead 2, so...
And speaking of Evil Dead, the Evil Dead, the game, just got delayed.
I feel like it was going to.
Yeah, I think we were all kind of expecting it. If it means they're making it better, I'm all for it.
Yeah, same. I don't mind delayed games. It sucks when it happens, but it happens.
But that means we're not pushing people under crunch.
Right, and that's always good. And I swear, there's only very few games I'm ever hyped for lately. Like, I think the next game that I'm hyped for is Elden Ring, but that's just because it's from Software, and I am a slut for Dark Souls, so... I'm not a masochist, I swear. I just really like Dark Souls.
My wife just got... I got her Kena for PS5 for Christmas, and we were not of the impression that apparently it is Pixar's Dark Souls. Had no idea. But apparently the combat in it is insanely difficult. And she is not a Dark Souls fan. So to have a game be this, like, vibrant and colorful and pretty, eating her lunch constantly, was not something she was prepared for. She's playing it on story mode now as opposed to normal.
So I don't video game, as is always my disclaimer when we start talking about them.
Well, all you need to know about Dark Souls, Lizzie, is that people say it's the hardest game ever, when really, no, you just got to get used to the fact that it's not very forgiving to mistakes.
Yeah.
And look, I pull my hair out at those games, but I fucking love them, so.
Yeah, it's a lot of trial and error, practice makes perfect kind of gaming. And a lot of people don't like that kind of thing. It's seemingly hard for hard's sake, but it's not really. It just takes tenacity to kind of not rage quit when something is being this brutal to you.
I think it says a lot about me that I've only ever beat one Soulsborne game in my life, and that was Bloodborne. Most of them I can't even beat, and I still fucking love them. So, and Bloodborne, that I was not expecting to beat that. I was just going, it's like, yeah, we'll see how far I get in this run. And I kept getting farther and farther, and it's like, holy shit, am I going to beat this fucking game? And then before I knew it, I was at the last fight again. I was in the second to last fight against Garamond, and I was like, oh, shit!
I tried Bloodborne. I used to sell video games. I used to work for unnamed game retailer. I always used to say when we would sell Bloodborne, it's a $120 game because you need to get the game and a controller because you're going to snap your controller in half playing it.
Well, see, what I like about Bloodborne is it's compared to Dark Souls, where you need to play it more defensively, Bloodborne is more rewarding to very aggressive playstyles. So while it's hard, it was more doable for me. Also, I just really like the gothic horror aesthetic it's got. Like, this is one of my favorite looking games ever. It looks so fucking pretty. It's pretty and how grotesque it looks.
I've been meaning to play it. I've been meaning to jump into it at some point, but I'm waiting for it to be super cheap.
Bloodborne? It is cheap. You can get
Bloodborne
it for like
Bloodborne is about $20 usually, because it's part of PlayStation Hits, but it's also constantly on sale.
I was waiting for it to be like $5.
Crystal, just I'll fucking get it for you on my next paycheck. just fucking play it, bitch.
I love the love in this room. It's just, you know.
Well, look, I just
nothing
really
but
like
emotional
blood.
Support.
I really, really like Bloodborne, and I want more people to experience it. I understand it's a hard game, but it's so rewarding to get through, and some of the creepy shit that happens is so fucking cool.
I started playing it because it was on PlayStation Plus about a year or so ago, and I got it through that, and I played it for about 15 minutes. And went, this is a gorgeous looking game. This is not for me.
Everyone has their own thing.
Exactly. While I respect the Soulsborne games, they're not for me. The closest I can say to have played something of that ilk was Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
I was going to say the same thing. Or like, I actually finished and played through that game.
I still haven't finished that one. I played it for a bit on PS4. And then I kind of stopped because my backlog is insane as it is. It's not just a clever name for me. I did just upgrade it to the PS5 version. So I'm going to be starting that again soon. If I can just decide on one game to play through at a time, because I've been bouncing around to like 20 different games the past week.
That's fair. I wish I had more time to play games. Desperately, I'm super busy all the time.
Yeah,
I'm glad I made this work.
I was releasing an album last year, so I started a bunch of games, and then like October, November, I stopped so I could finish my album. It was supposed to be out in November, it got pushed back to December, and I finally released it in December. So like, I haven't touched any games from October to December, and like right near the end of the year, I'm like, okay, I can get back into this now. And my backlog, which was large enough already, is now astronomical because, hey, Christmas presents. So,
you know, I know we were talking about it right before the podcast started recording, but do you want to talk about your thoughts on the Weird Al biopic?
Absolutely. I would
great,
love
great
to.
Great transition, Lizzie. I was actually going to bring that up.
Yeah, no, if people haven't heard, Weird Al announced that he has partnered up with FunnyOrDie.com and Roku to bring Weird the Al Yankovic Story to Roku devices as a Roku-exclusive movie, and has cast Daniel Radcliffe as himself, as Weird Al. I'm excited about this, but I'm excited about it for weird reasons. Number one, this is not going to be a typical biopic. This is not going to be, we'll say, wholly truthful, because it is going to be delving into Al's sordid celebrity love affairs, which, let's be honest, there aren't any. And 12 years ago, Funny or Die made a trailer for this movie. Weird Al wrote this movie with the guy who's writing and directing this one. And they did a fake trailer that had Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad as Al.
My boy Todd.
And it's amazing. It's hilarious. Olivia Wilde plays Madonna, and Al and Madonna apparently had a relationship, according to this movie trailer. Gary Cole plays Nick Yankovic, Al's dad. And in the most amazing stunt casting I have ever seen in my life, and I hope they bring him back for the full-length movie, Patton Oswalt as Dr. Demento.
I think at this point they would have to, right?
I hope so. I mean, Al and Patton have been friends for years, so if they don't bring him into it, it's a tragedy. As somebody who knows Dr. Demento personally, Patton's impression is fucking spot on.
He was really good. That trailer is something. If you haven't
seen
that,
the trailer is fantastic.
It was fantastic. It's the one he plays at his concerts.
yes. And that's the thing. If any media thing mentions Al in anything, he puts it into the show videos in his concerts. He even used to have that clip from King of the Hill. You know, I was just writing a song parody like Weird Al Yankovic. Bobby, Weird Al hung himself in the late 80s when people stopped buying his records.
Listen, one of my favorite facts in the universe is the fact that Weird Al and Rob Zombie are friends.
That's the only reason Weird Al is in Halloween 2. It's amazing.
Oh, it's 100% the only reason. It's because they were pals and Rob was like, hey, Al, come be in this movie.
It's such a, like, Al is, like, friends with the most people that you would not assume him to be friends with. It's because Al's just such a nice fucking guy. It's quality stuff. I anytime somebody says, oh, I'm friends with Weird Al, I'm like, of course you are.
Why wouldn't, upon being given the opportunity, why wouldn't you be?
Exactly.
I am excited to see Daniel Radcliffe be Weird Al.
I cannot wait, and I'm 100% certain that they cast Daniel Radcliffe as Al, because even before Al tweeted this himself, but he tweeted the clip from the Graham Norton show of Daniel Radcliffe doing Tom Lehrer's Element song, which is a parody of the Gilbert and Sullivan song from Pirates of Penzance, or I think, or something like that. Modern Major General got turned into the Elements. And it's phenomenal, his performance of it. So yeah, he's obviously a comedy music fan, loves Tom Lehrer. Of course, why wouldn't he play Weird Al? And of course, Al tweeted that out recently too. So.
Well, I've seen a lot of people pulling on Daniel Radcliffe the same thing they pulled on like Robert Pattinson when he was announced to play Batman, as people who are clearly entirely unaware of the vast and very interesting career Daniel Radcliffe has had.
Right?
Since Harry Potter.
Like, here's the thing. Like Daniel Radcliffe, Elijah Wood, and Robert Pattinson are able to do whatever the fuck they want now. They did their young adult movies, their young adult novels turned to movies, or in the case of Lord of the Rings, the old adult movies. And they did their movies based on books. They made their huge amount of money from these things, these franchises, these enormous franchises they were a part of. And now they get to go and do whatever weird fucking movie they want to do. They can do your Swiss Army Man or your Lighthouse or whatever weird movie Elijah Wood is in this week. You know, Elijah Wood did like a slate of like 7 movies in a row that are all fucking batshit insane. And fucking God love them for that, because they can do it now. They don't care. They made their money. They made their money. They can do what speaks to them artistically now. And if that's weird shit, yes, it's weird shit. Fucking go for it. I love that.
These people took the vast amount of money that they made from their multi-billion dollar franchises. And they were like, okay, now I'm going to go do weird indie shit for the next 15 years.
I absolutely love them for doing their weird indie shit. Just absolutely great.
You know, I feel like this, you know, this podcast has been great. I'm glad we're heading towards the end of this episode, but it was great that we actually got to talk a little bit about comedy music, considering, yes, you know, considering your wheelhouse.
Yes, yes.
I was going to mention, there was one thing I wanted to mention, and it's, I'll let you have the floor quickly.
Sure.
about a certain event that's coming up that I may or may not be a part of.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like, we were talking about the movie Logan, and that reminded me of the Logan Awards, which are the Logan Whitehurst Memorial Awards for Excellence in Comedy Music. They are the Comedy Music Awards, basically. I am the chairperson of said awards. This is the 12th year that they've been around. They are awards for comedy music. And our friend Crystal here is one of our jurors this year.
Before we continue your thought in a second, Jazzy has to head out right now. So I just was going to give the floor to her quickly, and then we'll briefly go back to that in a second.
Sure, sure.
But,
sorry about that.
I need to get going, so I'll just plug my pluggables real quick. You can find me over on Lady Jazzington on Twitter, as well as the same username on Twitch. Currently doing a marathon of Kingdom Hearts 2 with Shakira Dunn as of this recording. And you can also find me on YouTube under Jazzy Oliver.
Jazzy, I hope everyone follows you and checks you out. We will definitely hang out again next time we did the episode. Have a good rest of the day.
Yeah, you as well.
All right.
Nice meeting you.
Bye, Jess. Okay. So sorry for the interruption, Ian.
Sorry about that. I kept hearing the blips, but like not seeing where they were coming from. And no, totally. It didn't cut me off at all. It's totally okay.
Yeah. So
have the chat.
Oh. Yeah, we have a chat going with our call. It's fine. This is all staying in. So.
You know, who needs anything to make sense to the viewer?
Exactly. No. I thought you were just gonna take that bit and edit it into the end instead. But whatever blows your hair back, go right ahead.
But yeah, you were mentioning that I am going to be a juror for the Logan Awards.
You are currently a juror for the Logan Awards.
I
yes.
am. That's true.
The awards are named after Logan Whitehurst, who was a comedy musician. Put out an album called Goodbye My Four Track, which Dr. Demento called the Sergeant Pepper of comedy music. And it's named after him in memorial because Logan Whitehurst passed away in 2006 from a brain tumor. But we do these awards in order to honor Logan's memory, as well as to honor the year's best comedy music. And because of that, we call in three jurors who are fans of comedy music and three comedy musicians as jurors. And that means that, yes, Crystal, you are a juror this year. And thank you so much for helping out this year. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all. I think it's fun going through this stuff. Like, I love comedy music, but I'm not like in the scene in terms of like constantly seeing things. So honestly, like seeing all these like great, like talented artists, like, and listening to their stuff and watching the videos, I'm like, wow, I haven't heard of this before. I haven't seen this. So it's like really exciting to see all this like new stuff. I mean, obviously I know some of the other ones that are hard to avoid, but
yes,
some of the smaller ones are some of the most fascinating finds.
I agree with that. See, I'm part of a website called The Funny Music Project, which is The Fump, THEFUMP, thefump.com. And we've been around since 2007. We put out two songs a week for free under Creative Commons license, or you get a high quality version for a paid download. And I've been a part of that website since 2010. But we have 150 different artists, over 150 different artists, who are a part of this comedy music collective releasing songs every week. We have about maybe 50 artists who release stuff on the regular. But outside of the Fump, comedy music is still such a burgeoning art form. It's been around for, you know, obviously decades. Alan Sherman, even back in the 60s, even before that, there's been comedy music. But it's such an unnoticed art form. Not a lot of people know about comedy music other than your major label guys like Weird Al or Tenacious D, Lonely Island, even Garfunkel and Oates to a certain extent. But there's dozens more, hundreds more artists doing the same thing that are not getting nearly the recognition that they should. And that's kind of the purpose of the awards. That's why for the awards, we have open nominations. We don't just like nominate people that we like or that we're familiar with as people on the committee with the Logan Awards. And I say committee, it's basically just me as the chairperson, and the Fump organizes it and pays for the trophies, whatnot. But open nominations has anybody writing in whomever they like for the award. As long as they released a comedy song or a comedy music video in the year previous, that song is eligible for this year's awards. So we have people writing in artists that we've never heard of. I discovered Auntie Donna not long ago, which is a Australian sketch comedy group who happened to put out a comedy music album that year. It was 2019. And I absolutely love them. And now they have a show on Netflix with Weird Al in it. You know, it's a great way to discover a lot of these artists that you wouldn't really get the chance to discover before. And because of that, I also do a YouTube show called A Comedy Musician Reacts, where I react to comedy music that is new or stuff that I haven't heard of that a lot of people kind of bring to me and say, hey, this is something you should check out.
And I've seen your content, so it's good stuff.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I recommend. And I just wanted to say that in addition to, like, you know, being excited to hear all this incredible talent and stuff, it's an honor to be part of this as a juror for this awards. Kind of like Logan, I actually like lost my dad to a brain tumor in 2009. So I do feel like it's an honor to be a part of something to honor someone who I've had essentially similar firsthand experience of going through what it's like, you know, seeing it. So
sure,
I'm just happy to be a part of it and to listen to great, funny music.
Yes.
In this dark, dark world, it's nice to listen to something and laugh or watch
Absolutely.
A video and just like kind of and just enjoy it for like 3-4 minutes.
Yeah, that's the beauty of comedy music, to me anyway. Comedy music can be about anything. Like anybody can write a love song. Only in comedy music will you get that love song be about a taco.
Yeah, that's true. I'm very happy that not only I think this is the best way to transition out of here, no pun intended there, this is a point where we're gonna do our plug. So Lizzie, you want to plug what the people can find you?
Yes, you can find me at Lizzie Lemon Drop or The Final Whore on TikTok. I talk a lot about movies and music and other whatever is bothering me at that specific time of the day.
The Final Whore is my favorite song by Europe.
I want the parody to exist now is the thing. You've said it. Now it has to. I
already parodied it with Final Fantasy. I already did that one, so.
No, you got to do it again. Too late. Get it.
Do it again. That's your. But make it only, just specifically for Lizzie here.
Obviously.
No one else will be able to hear it. It's just gonna exist.
Just for me.
Yes, just specifically.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go right ahead.
No, I'm done.
Ian, you wanna tell the good people where they can find you?
Sure. My music is available at insaneian.bandcamp.com. It's actually available on anything, Amazon, Apple Music, Spotify. But if you really want to make sure that I get the most money, you can get it all streaming or paid at insaneian.bandcamp.com. You can also check out my music videos and my Comedy Musician Reacts show at youtube.com/insaneian. And also, please check out the music at thefump.com, thefump.com. That is comedy music on Tuesdays and Fridays every single week. We've been doing it since 2007. We just released volume 90 of our collection CDs.
Damn. That's awesome, though. Constantly working, right?
Oh, yeah.
That is genuinely exciting and awesome. Inspiring too. I wanna do more of my creative stuff. Currently, this is my main creativity because
have an outlet, whether it be a podcast or a song. As long as you're doing it, that's all that matters.
That is true, and I get to talk to amazing people.
Absolutely.
And with that in mind, I will plug where you can find me. My name is Crystal Williams. I am a writer and shit tweeter. So you can follow, you can go to my like Medium and read my articles. So they range from like sociopolitical topics to talking about being trans. And also I wrote an article about Weird Al Yankovic in my life. So that is something you can do. You can also follow me on Twitter at Crystal W Rocks. And yeah, you can watch my tweets, which, are random. As my mind is. So, and with that in mind, thank you again for listening to another episode of the Galaxy Kingdom podcast. Ian, it was wonderful to have you. Maybe we'll have you again in the future if you'd love to be on.
Absolutely. I would be honored and honored to be on this time. Thank you.
All right. And with that, we will see you on the next episode. Goodbye, everybody. We'll be right back.